loneliness can be hazardous to your health. That's the conclusion of a study released this month at the annual convention of the American Psychological Association.
In a review of studies involving millions of people, the study authors found that social isolation and loneliness raise the risk of death at similar levels to the health risks of obesity, and loneliness is on the rise in the United States.
On the flip side, the authors found that higher levels of social connection were linked with a lower risk of early death.
This month's findings are part of a growing body of research suggesting that our social health has direct consequences for our physical health.
Regan Goering joins us now from our studio in Green Bay. He's the Ben J. and Joyce Rosenberg Professor of Human Development and Psychology at UW Green Bay. Regan, thanks a lot for joining us again.
You are welcome.
Well, it might not be intuitively obvious, I guess. How could loneliness affect our physical well-being?
Well, I think, you know, there are a couple of different things to think about here. Firstly, you used two words, social isolation and loneliness, and I think it's important to first tease those apart. What's interesting here is social isolation is more the objective measure. So I can say, let's count up how many friends Rob has, or let's see how many times Rob emails or calls friends. That would be a measure of social isolation. Then I can ask you, Rob, do you feel alone? Are you feeling lonely? That your perception, your subjective perception, is your measure of loneliness. And I think what's interesting here is in the studies that were talked about, both social isolation and loneliness, so both the subjective measure and the subjective measure, both were related to poorer health. And to make that even more concrete, in one of the studies, and actually at that APA report, there were three different studies that were talked about, including millions of participants. And what I think is startling is the higher social isolation led to an almost 50% higher likelihood to die early. And I think that's the startling thing, that here's something that is psychological. It's a feeling that far too often too many of us downplay that can actually have physical consequences.
What do we know about why there's that connection, why feeling lonely and why also being disconnected from people can have this very significant health outcome?
So what seems to be happening is, and I think the person who's done the most work on this is John Cacioppo down in Chicago, who has a great book on loneliness for anybody interested. It's probably one of the best compilations of the research on loneliness. And what Cacioppo and colleagues have shown is that when you get lonely, when you feel alone, it actually leads to this cascade of chemical reactions in the brain that influences your immunity, your immune system, increases your stress and the release of stress hormones, and literally causes physical changes in the body that can lead to chronic stress, something also referred to as allostatic load. So it's wear and tear on the body. And this constant wear and tear basically eats down your system and then can put you at higher risk for a whole range of negative health outcomes.
So there's the risk, and the authors attached to one of the studies they put out said, hey, we think we're getting more lonely in the United States, and there have been other pieces of research and writings. We're not joining clubs. We're more likely to live alone. We're less likely to be married. Are you worried about more social isolation and more loneliness in the United States?
Well, I think, you know, the one of the reasons that the term growing and a growing problem is attached to this is, you know, the three studies talked about at the APA meeting really spanned time from 2010 all the way to 2015. So that's a period of time, and especially in the first study. And for anybody interested, there's a wonderful study put out by the AARP that studied over 42 million Americans, and 35% of the participants in that survey rated themselves as being lonely. Now, I think when you look at trends, people have argued that perhaps we are getting more socially isolated because we may spend more time online versus seeing people face to face, you know. And I think what's really interesting there, when you try to look at trends and what's causing it, is that I don't think we can completely point the finger at the internet. There's some really interesting results relating to the internet. I dug into that AARP study a little bit more, and what they found was that amongst the people lonely, and the people not lonely, internet use was approximately the same. There was no statistically significant difference in internet use between those individuals who found themselves lonely and those who did not. What's interesting is the perception. People who were lonely perceived that more internet use would make them lonely. So there's this really interesting interplay between what's actually happening and what's not. And from a trend perspective, because social media has grown so much, it's likely that people believe that the explosion of social media could be actually driving them further away. But the data doesn't exactly bear that out.
We're talking to psychology professor Regan Gurung from UW Green Bay, looking at loneliness and social isolation as health risks. Regan, a lot of this sounds like bad news, but it seems like there's also some good news here. We know this is a problem. We know more social connectedness leads to better health outcomes. So what do we start to do with this to take advantage of the good side of this story?
Well, I think the really important item here is that having social support, feeling loved, esteemed, and cared for is extremely important. And for all of us, I think cultivating our social support networks is extremely important. Making those connections, taking the time to meet with friends or keep up with your friends is really critical. And I think something that's was buried in the study that I found really fascinating is that the biggest negative impact is actually not for the very old. There's a very key age difference where the most danger of loneliness was for the age group between 45 to 49 years of age. So people 65 and above didn't seem to have as many problems with loneliness as the people who were 45 to 49. So I think when you think about what's going on there, especially if it's a family with kids, you're extremely busy, you don't have time for friends, it really does, as you said, point to, hey, people, take some time to spend time with your friends and make those connections. Also, I think it's really important for those of us who are relatively comfortable with our level of connections to look at others who may not have those connections. Be on the lookout for people who don't seem to be talking to anybody, who don't seem to have connections, because clearly their isolation can have some significant health issues.
One idea I've seen, I think, again, it was involved in these APA reports, is that maybe primary care doctors should include, you know, they ask if
Absolutely.
You smoke, they ask all kinds of questions. They should ask about your social connectedness.
Well, I think, you know, this is really matching a major trend in medicine where, you know, doctors are being urged to go beyond just the do you smoke. I mean, once upon a time, you didn't even ask about smoking, right? Now that's one of the things that's included. Are you in pain? That's something that's relatively new. Probably next up and very important is depression. Very recently, within the last 2 years, doctors now ask, are there times in the last 2 weeks when you have felt low? That's critical. And I think in the psychological literature, depression and loneliness and anxiety are all very related. They go together. So if somebody is lonely, they are at much higher risk of being depressed. And I think adding loneliness to that mental health screening is critical, because I don't think we spend enough time with mental health. You know, somebody breaks a bone, breaks a leg, we rush to their assistance. Somebody says, oh, you know what, I feel sort of low. People don't know what to say sometimes. Sometimes people avoid them. And I think we need to do a much better job of treating mental health as seriously as we treat physical health.
I wonder about that, the prescription for loneliness, though, because someone, especially if someone is depressed, say, it's easy to say, get out there, connect with people, make friends. Actually making it happen might be a tall order.
Right. And I think what complicates the issue more is the difference between actually perceived support or connections and received. So, you know, I can be sitting in my room, and even though I see nobody, if I believe that I have people to see if I want to, I'll actually feel okay. You know, so it's the challenge becomes, how do we actually build people's perceived sense of connection and sense of social support? How do we let people know that if they need it, we are there for them? And I think, I think the onus often falls on family and friends first. But I think wherever we are, whether it's in the workplace, just being a little bit more sensitive to individuals and their states of connection, I think will go a long way. So absolutely, you're right. You can't force somebody to interact with somebody else. But I think sometimes it's just finding the right thing that will work for that individual.
Regan Goering is with us. He's a professor of psychology at UW Green Bay. We're talking about the public health hazards of loneliness and how to turn the tide on loneliness and social isolation in the United States.
And you can join us at 800-642-1234. Have you had a problem with loneliness or social isolation? Have you done things to make connections and what worked for you? And if you do work in the healthcare field, do you see this as a problem? You can call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Regan Goering is with us now. He's a psychology professor at UW Green Bay. And we're talking about research that shows loneliness is on the rise in the United States and that it's a public health problem.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. Has loneliness been a problem for you at some point in your life? Have you done something to make new connections with people, maybe in a new place, maybe in a new stage of your life? If you work as a healthcare provider, do you see loneliness and isolation as a problem for your patients? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll go right to our callers. Mark is on the line in Delavan. Mark, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What did you want to tell us about, Mark?
First off, what the professor said about 45 to 49 really hit me because I went through a bad time there. I was not going out with friends and really upset about it. What I really wanted to do is go out and have a few drinks. Everybody's married, and I'm single. So that was hard. And then in my late 40s, early 50s, I actually lost work as a teacher and was, while I was working, looking for work, had a lot of time, and made a lot of connections on social media, on Facebook, and started to find things I wanted to do with myself. Moved from Chicago to Wisconsin, started getting involved. But even though I wasn't real involved, not a whole lot, I just felt like, you know, my perception was that I had friends largely because of Facebook.
Interesting. Mark, thank you so much for calling in and sharing that. And Regan, you mentioned that social media isn't the bad guy necessarily that people make it out to be, but it's a tool that we can use for good, neutral, or for bad. And it sounds like Mark found a way to use it really to help himself out.
Well, absolutely. I mean, and I think Mark also puts his finger on a couple of other things that were pretty big in those studies. Some of the key indicators or risk factors are living alone, and Mark mentioned that. Living alone, not being married, and lower income is another one. What's interesting is there aren't differences by race or education. You know, sometimes in a lot of health factors, you think that'd be educational differences in loneliness. That's not the case. And especially as far as the internet use goes, in about the 90s, there was a big scare where an article was actually published that said, will the internet make us lonely? And some years later, they actually had to recant that title because they had misinterpreted the data. And it actually showed exactly as Mark Leisney said, that internet use could actually be a great help for some people who to get their connections going.
Mark, thanks for the call, and I'm glad that moving to Wisconsin was part of the solution for you. Thanks a lot. Back to our callers now. Stacy is on the line in Grand Rapids. Stacy, hi.
Hello.
What do you want to tell us about, Stacy?
I'm a regional director of housing. I have housing facilities that house the elderly and the disabled. I've been doing this for 21 years. I'm really excited that this has become a conversation. You know, we put on a lot of activities. We try to encourage bonds between people where they start looking out for each other. And if they don't see you for a few days, come check your mail or whatever. They reach out and they knock and they visit. But when they don't do that, that's when they end up in the assisted living facilities. That's when they go into the nursing homes. So it does absolutely end with physical recession in their well-being as well as their health.
Stacey, thank you so much for sharing that. So building that community in this case, a new place, in this case, a senior housing home, but having that community of people who check in on each other, Regan.
Yeah, you know, and Stacey, when something that she talks about is in the social support literature, what you see is that as we grow older, our social convoys tend to get smaller and we are much more picky. So we may lose people from our convoy, but we add people very selectively. So even though the social networks of an older individual will not be as large as a younger individual, more often than not, that network is more powerful in serving a stronger purpose. So looking at people's social convoys as they age is another really big deal, is how has the number of people around a person changed as they've gotten older? And that's another big risk factor to look for if that convoy has dropped dramatically.
Stacey, thanks for that call. I want to kind of flip this around, Regan. It seems like a lot of people have issues with loneliness and losing those connections when there's a physical change in their lives. So if that softball team was their connection, that broken ankle takes away that connection. As people age, if they used to go walking with people and they have balance issues, how do we recalibrate and find new ways to connect when that old way, maybe because of a physical change, is going away?
I think the part of the answer is really being open to trying out new avenues that we haven't before. Right next to breaking something or having a change in your physical activity, something really big, and Mark mentioned this earlier, is moving. In a lot of the loneliness research, some of the people who are also very much at risk is within that first year of moving from one state to another. Because very often, you know, you've left all those people behind and you've got to make those new networks. I mean, reading some of that research has made me particularly sensitive to somebody moving into the neighborhood or into town or into your workplace, where you've got to realize, hey, this person has probably left their social networks behind. And whereas, you know, Facebook can help with that domain, there's nothing to beat, hey, you know, taking that person out to coffee or helping them to get to know some more people around you.
We're talking to Regan Gurung, psychology professor at UW Green Bay, looking at loneliness and the effect it can have on our health and the positive impact of social connection on our health. Tyler is on the line in Madison. Tyler, hi.
Hi, can you hear me?
We can. Go ahead, Tyler.
Hi. I was just listening to the conversation and just wanted to bring up an observation I have. Just working as a home health physical therapist, I see all of my patients I see are homebound, and I think it's just kind of interesting to observe the contrast in the well-being in patients that are alone at home with no spouse, maybe that have passed away, or they're just alone, versus the elderly patients that I see that are in those community-based facilities, the senior apartments, where they have that social connection, and just how that directly impacts their physical health.
Tyler, thanks for that call. And we often hear about that conflict over, you know, often a senior. Do they want to stay in their home? Do they want to go to a community? Where do you make that decision? Tyler, seeing positives for saying, hey, maybe being alone in my house or my apartment isn't the place for me anymore, and moving into that community.
Yeah, you know, the big thing to watch out for, though, and you mentioned, Rob, even when you mentioned breaking something or when a person's spouse dies, I think the natural tendency is for us to help that person out a lot right when that event has taken place. But that drops off, you know, and I often think about, it's great to take over food the week it's happened or the week after or the second week after it's happened. But don't forget that person still has a major life change. And I think that's where the problems come in, is the person after, let's say, the loss of a spouse gets a lot of attention in the first few weeks, but they're still feeling that pain, and we've got to try and make sure we keep that consistent.
Thanks for the call, Tyler. Kimball on Facebook got in touch and says, as someone who's an introvert who's trying to get out more, Kimball says, been the object of being ostracized in groups. I sit at a table with 5 empty chairs. Soon I'm at an empty table with no chairs. No one wants to bring the odd man in. So as we start to wrap up, Regan, this is a public health problem that anybody can make a difference on by letting the odd man in, or looking for that person who doesn't have that connection.
Absolutely. And I think the thing here is it's not easy for everybody to go and try and make a connection. It's not, you know, it also takes a certain personality to walk over to a table where there's only one person sitting. But I think there are a lot of people whose personalities fit that. And I think it can be a group joint effort. But we've got to all do this together.
We'll leave it there for now. Regan, thanks a lot for joining us again today. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
That was Regan Gurung. He's a professor of human development and psychology at UW Green Bay. Been talking about new research out this month on loneliness, social connection, and how it relates to our health. We're done talking about it on the air, but you can, as always, share your thoughts and your stories. You can tweet us at Central Time WPR or post on the Central Time Facebook page.